guest here. And now here is your host.
So, Jerron, man, last time we spoke, which was just a few months ago, wasn't it in January?
Yeah, it was January.
And you were picking out your clothes for the Grammys and probably about to be on tour for the rest of the year.
Yeah, for
out
sure.
Your solo stuff. And boy, have things changed, man.
Whoa, what a turn we've seen, right?
Yeah, how are you doing with everything?
Pretty good, you know, in the inner bubble. I'm just using it as time to, like, focus on, you know, just learning and, like, you know, doing the type of things that I wouldn't be able to do in the road, you know, like producing more and more, you know, at the home studio and, you know, playing this beautiful Rhodes that you mentioned earlier. And,
yeah.
You know, just getting more to the, like, tactful part of, like, just piano playing, you know, just learning some jazz literature, some classical music and everything, you know, just going back to square one, I guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's interesting to be forced to go back there.
Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. On another note, I read this beautiful post that you posted on Juneteenth. Oh, wait, before we even get into that. First of all, I'm sorry for having to move this.
Oh, dude, no problem.
Yeah. Thank you for being so cool about it, because it was one of those things where it's a whole band. We had to do this tech check, like do a, we got hired to do a private thing, but it's going to be a live stream thing. And those guys were kind of like, well, before we get into paying you all this money, can we see what it's going to look like? So we went to do the check. And of course, when you get to the thing in a 7-person band, it takes forever to do it, a lot longer than you think. Anyway, thank you for being so cool. So I read this beautiful post that you wrote on Juneteenth about where you grew up, and I was touched a lot of it by talking about how you don't feel like your ancestors' history holds you down as much as lifts you up. And that's the first time I've heard that in a while. Can you expand on
that?
Yeah, go ahead.
The ideology behind that is basically, you know, especially in music, something that we'll call soul, you know, which I feel like is, you know, it's intelligent thought meeting, you know, a spiritual side of it, you know, a more like, you know, symbolic meaning, right? So I feel like, you know, like people say with the chip on your shoulder, right?
Right.
That gives you more of a, you know, an adrenaline-led reaction, right? So it's sort of that type of thought. It's what I thought of when I thought of that. And also, just, you know, when you think of segregation and the like, you know, like the ability that I have to be able to, you know, meet wonderful people and talk to people like you that wouldn't have happened, you know, or like any of my friends, you know, it wouldn't be able to happen, you know, without the sacrifice of them, right? So it's like, whenever I think of that as well, then, you know, it reminds me to not take it for granted what we have now here in this current time. So, yeah, I feel like that was the thought behind it.
Yeah. You talked about that you grew up by the train tracks that took the slaves to the sugar mills, right?
Right.
Were you
right.
cognizant of that? I mean, knowing that you were in the land where all the things happened. What does that mean to you when you're walking down those tracks and stuff?
So early on, you don't really have you know, knowledge of it. You just sort of go through your everyday life, you know, like everyone has that, like, you know, that shield of ignorance. Like as you grow up, you know, you're just having fun. You're an innocent child, right?
Right.
But eventually, like it took for me to, like, you know, do some searching, you know, to really understand too, you know, because, you know, in Southern Louisiana, it's like a bunch of plantation homes. You know, we do tours and stuff like that. We went on field trips there, you know? So that's interesting, you know, but I feel like when you talk about slavery in school, you talk about, like, you know, you talk about, like, the cotton gin and, like, that type of thing, you know, you only talk, like, three or so things. Like, it's not really in depth. So I feel like one thing that I did when I was soul searching was when I realized that, you know, it was cash crops, and it was, you know, it was like having servants and the like as well. So when you think of the sugarcane fields that, you know, surround like a place like in Southern Louisiana, like Lauraville, Louisiana, where I'm from, whenever you see that, it just reminds you that that's what slaves have to till. That's what they have to work in. You know, it wasn't this crazy idea of like cotton or something, you know, or just, you know, what you see on Django or Birth of a Nation or whatever, you know, but it's like, when you really think of it, it's just the things that were around you, you know? So I thought about that, and then I realized that it was a train track there, and it's not there anymore, actually. But I just looked it up one day, and it actually did run from a sugar mill to the fields and back into, like, sharecropper homes and, like, slave enslaved homes as well. So it was just interesting to find out, yeah.
Did you get out and protest at all?
Yeah, I did go the first weekend. Whenever the George Floyd awareness happened in Tuesday or so that week, I went that Saturday. Yes.
Okay.
It was the first time I left the house actually too. That wasn't for like essential things. So, you know, it was interesting. You know, something like that, it brought us out. You know.
Yeah, and that was a couple weeks ago. So you made it. You came out without the virus.
No. Yeah, I'm clean. I'll live.
Yeah, thank God. As far as movements go, I've been talking to a lot of different people and just kind of saying that, like, as this goes on, it seems like the movement, the movement isn't slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
The awareness isn't, you know how, like, there's after there's a school shooting or after there's an undue kind of... you know, murder of a black guy that didn't deserve it. There's like a lot of energy around that for a few days. Then it goes away.
Exactly.
Do you feel real change coming on, or at least another step?
I actually do. I see this newfound awareness, you know, that's like sticking to the social consciousness. So it's like, it's becoming like an everyday way of life, you know? It's like other protests that give birth to laws or whatever. We just live with it. So I feel like some laws and things like that are like bound to happen, because that's where people are really putting pressure. Like, it's more of a like educated pressure, I feel like, this time around. Mm-hmm. It's telling people what laws to do, what to abolish, you know, what systems to get rid of and everything like that. So I think that's really cool. You know, it's not just the hashtag, right. I feel like.
How much of like everyone's involvement this time do you think is due to the fact that no one's really got anything else to do? They can really focus on it.
100%, man.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was sitting at home and I was like, oh, well, this is the first time leaving the house to go to a protest or whatever. So, yeah, I feel like it was a perfect mix of like boredom, for lack of a better word, meeting like something that you had to either get behind or like, ignore. And like, I feel like, you know, people ignoring this situation, like they didn't really get through scot-free, you know, like right. Everyone had to do something. Everyone had to pick a side.
Yeah. And I feel like also there's this, there was no meaning to all of this lockdown. There was no meaning to all of this coronavirus. There was nothing really to fight against except the shitty government we've been fighting against forever. That this added some sort of meaning, like, well, if I'm going to be under lockdown, then I'm going to do something with my life. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Stand for something or fall for nothing. Right. Or fall for everything. Wait.
Right. Yeah. Stand for something or fall for everything.
Fall for everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Are you, what do you see? What do you see change-wise that can be done and is kind of like taking steps? Like, obviously, like does something like like Gone with the Wind being taken off of HBO, right? You know about this, right?
Right.
Is that? I mean, I looked at that two ways. In one way, I was like, well, I understand that. But another way is like, I don't think anybody watches that and goes like, oh, yeah, we can get back to the good old days. But also, they took off the one movie that had the very first African-American Academy Award winner.
Wow. You see? Yeah.
Like,
because a lot of those roles then were race roles only, you know, for people of color, you know. So, yeah, I feel like some of it is symbolic, you know. some of it is, you know, just pressure or like a perceived pressure, you know, to just kind of do it. Because honestly, I feel like a lot of businesses are like doing it preemptively. If I'm not mistaken, that's what happened with the Aunt Jemima situation. I don't feel like it was pressure from the people again for that. And they just went ahead and did it. So it kind of reminds me of like, you know, I will get some emails sometimes from like, you know, Uber. Or you probably got the same, you know, from every business.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's like, we stand with Black people in America. So it's cool. But actually, I got offended, you know, at it because when I was first thinking about it, I was like, you know, they just, you know, they're trying to pander, you know. So that's what I thought of at first. But honestly, I thought of people who like grew up in an era where, you know, during segregation and the like, and they wouldn't have seen like open support from a business, you know, they would have seen support of the other side, actually. Right. So that's what's good about it. You know, so some of it is pandering, some of it is just symbolic, you know, or some of it is just like, you know, like a willful ignorance just to like distract people or whatever. But all in all, I think it's better than not. And it's like, it's good support. It's good to see the support. But yeah, I feel like it would have to be things like us voting, you know, and like changing laws, you know, to really make a change, you know.
Right. Well, I think like there's a lot more talk about that now too. I just feel like I feel like there's more actual momentum.
I agree for sure.
Yeah. Do you have any stance on like the politicization of all of this? Like, it seems like a few weeks ago everyone kind of wanted something, and then now all of a sudden some people are like, "Well, you're tearing up the monuments," and you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I feel like that's when I really started to see that people's true colors, in a sense, because I feel like no one was like, no, I don't like Black people or something, you know? I feel like more so it was just like, you know, people talking about looting or talking about this, that, the other. And like, and yeah, like you said, like making it the arms of like left or right side, you know, as opposed to just like a human rights issue. It's something I always think of it as, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. What about like, you've been keeping up with like all this stuff with Jackie Benson and her doing like the Blues on the Screen thing and getting to curate that whole thing. What's your experience? How long have you been in Austin?
So it's been about a little over 4 years now.
Okay. Yeah. So you see, like, when you go hang out at certain places, it is just all white without anybody really saying anything about it. Like, I have a brother that lives in Miami, and he came to visit me a couple years ago.
Right.
And we went to Continental Club and up to the gallery and then to Sea Boys, and then we went to Hotel Vegas. And in the Uber ride on the way home, he was like, "Are there any Black people here?" Like, is there...
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm from Louisiana, right? So it's the same thing for me, you know, my experience, because New Orleans is like, it's more Black people there than white people. You know, I was one of the many cities there, but, so it's very interesting. The thing is, I feel like it's like a tale of two cities, you know. I feel like it's Black Austin and there's Austin, which is basically white Austin.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like an analogy for that is sort of like, you know, when you talk about fashion, is women's fashion, but you have to say men's fashion to dictate that it's for men specifically.
Right.
So like Austin music scene is basically the white music scene. And then you have to say like the Black music scene to dictate that. But, you know, one thing I did, you know, was just, you know, just because of the music I'm into, you know, I was able to like, I'll jam blues, rock, country, you know, those things are like a, typical Austin music, but I still love the, you know, neo soul and hip hop, you know, R&B, you know, which is, you know, there's a bunch of acts out here doing that, of course, and killing it, you know, but it's still stilted. Or I was told it was stilted as well, you know. That was another thing about it as well.
What did they say when you came here?
Well, some people told me, they were like, you know, it's not too many Black people there, and like, it's not that many opportunities.
I mean, to laugh, but it's just so weird to have these two. It's also like a city of two mindsets, like. It's this totally like progressive liberal city,
right?
But the minorities are kind of kept in their areas.
Exactly. Know? It's like a city like Austin. Sometimes it's like it has the identity of a minority, You know what I mean? It has like that art and this cool things, you know what I mean? And the love for it, but it's like the people aren't necessarily always a part of it, I feel like. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's weird.
But yeah,
it's...
people actually told me to, you know, to like leave and like not, you know, not in a rude way, you know, like, yeah, I won't name names because like, you know,
no,
the cats that moved out, you know what I mean? And yeah, it's just interesting.
Well, in your band, mm-hmm. Black Pumas is a mixed band.
Yeah, for sure. That's the thing, you know, like, I always had the propensity of, like, I was in mixed bands in, like, Lafayette, you know what I mean? Louisiana, you know, playing Zydeco, rock, you know, blues and all the good stuff, you know? So, yeah, the thing is, like, I always was able to do that. I noticed some of my peers, like, they wouldn't, you know, really do that, you know? So that's what's interesting about me and my movements through the city, you know? It's just, like, I just get along with everyone and just take part in, like, so many genres of music. Like, it just comes together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the divide, I think, doesn't come from us. Like, mm-hmm. our, like, music, the musicians themselves. It comes for from sure. the way the system's been set up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%, dude. I feel like musicians were the first people to integrate, you know? Look at Sly and the Family Stone and like
yeah.
Dave Brubeck and you know what I mean? Going back to that, it's like we never cared about that.
Yeah.
So yeah, but the system, it's sort of like the story of Elvis, you know, where he gave praise to Big Mama Thornton and all these people, you know, but you know, the Rolling Stone magazine or whatever decided that he was the king of rock and roll and he never would have called himself that, you know? Like yeah. he was down, he was cool, he was hip, he was from Memphis, you know? So it's like the system just decides to, you know, they decide to split up soul and country music, you know?
Right. He wasn't himself stealing the music and pretending that it was his. He was paying homage to people he mm-hmm. thought were way cooler than him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And he was jamming with these people and like, you know, he got a degree in it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What all have you been producing? Like, who all have you been working with through this?
So, me and Adrian go back and forth, like, every day. We're working on just a bunch of little tracks and stuff. I've been working with Michael Longoria and James Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
Are you heard about it? So, I just want to produce some more, like, soul and neo-soul persuasion, sort of like, you know, paying homage to, like, D'Angelo, early 2000s, and also, you know, the futuristic version of that. But, yeah, so we've been doing that, and, like, it's, like, a full band endeavor, you know, so I'm just writing the songs and getting those made. I'm also doing, like, some dance music, you know, more housey, K-Tronada stuff, you know what I mean, as an homage to my 20s, you know? So,
What was that? What were you doing in your 20s? You were going out to the clubs and dancing?
Well, I'm 27 now, so okay. I'm just saying.
Okay.
I'm going to do, like, some fresh pop music, right, too, right. You know? But, you know, it all starts with jazz for me too. So I've been like just going from that into like more of a neo solo thing. But yeah, that's about it. You know, just those type of things. And working on loops as well. I'm working on a sample pack for splice.com right now.
Oh, so, awesome.
Yeah, I've been doing that right now. So it's pretty intense, but it would be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. How did it go? You released your music after you were on here last time. Fantastic mm-hmm. stuff. Are you putting out more soon?
Yeah, so actually, this Friday, the whole first in the series of the gold tape, the beat tapes will be coming out. So that's like, in a couple of days or so. So, yeah, that's sort of like the beat tape side of it all, you know. I had Intelligent Moves come out with Needy from Trouble in the Streets. That was cool. And, like, just going to put that out. I got some other cool ones. A track I did with Adrian is on there, and then another one with rap vocals on it, and the rest of it is instrumental. So yeah, that'll be fun.
Man, I heard this record by is it Michael Kurankawa? Is that a guy? Do you know who that is?
Michael Kiwanuka.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not his latest record, but the record before totally sounds mm-hmm. like he made it with Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
those guys. Adrian loves Michael Kiwanuka.
Oh, he does.
He talks about him a lot. Yeah. Him and Harry both love him. Yeah, but like, yeah, he's pretty sick. I started listening to him after they recommended him.
Yeah, a friend of mine just turned me on to him like on Monday, and I've been listening to him like crazy. It's fantastic. Nice. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Super good from the UK too.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's like a second British invasion happening right now with like Tom Misch too. I don't know if you listen to his record.
No. What's his name? Updated.
Tom Misch, M-I-S-C-H. Yeah, this dude, he's a guitarist, but like he also has, you know, cool poppy R&B vocals as well. But cool. Like, yeah, he shreds, you know.
These might
sort of a jazzier John Mayer.
Okay. Were you ever a guy into like Maxwell?
Oh, yeah, yeah, for yeah. sure. Ascension and yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All that. Those records are mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. Wait, but he was American, right? He's American.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
There's this, oh, it's Roachford. There's this guy from the early 90s, late 80s, British mm-hmm. soul singer dude named Roachford that I was real into.
Oh, like nice. Yeah. yeah. It's this other new guy too, Jordan Rakai.
Okay.
Yeah, he's cool too. He actually did a record on Blue Note. I think he's on Blue Note. But oh, wow. Yeah, from the UK. He works with Tom Misch and people like that.
Yeah.
In that little thing. But like, it's a cool rabbit hole. Listen to Jazz UK playlist on Spotify.
Okay.
And that'll give you, because it's not as, you know, it's new age jazz, which is basically, you know, most of his R&B, you know?
Yeah. Where does your taste in jazz reside? I mean, like, are you a bebop guy?
Mm-hmm. So I like bop for sure, but I really resonate with like the cool jazz, like early, mid 60s on, like, you know, like Art Blakey and Jazz Messengers. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Early, well, that level of Miles Davis and all that good stuff, right. You know? When John Coltrane came out, my favorite things, and it kind of converged. I really like Horace Silver, too, you know? So whenever he peaked around that time, early 70s at the most, you know? That's one part of it, you know? Then it gets into fusion as well, like in the 70s, you know?
Yeah,
Freddie Hubbard, what he was doing, Billy Cobham, you know? Man, Herbie, of course, you know, that's my dude. Joe Zawa now in the Weather Report, you know, so
yeah,
I really love that. And then I feel like lastly, it's Robert Glasper is a big part for me, you know. So like that's post 2000s right there, you know. So he really bridged hip hop with his Black Radio albums, you know, that he did with, like, you know, he had like people from Snoop Dogg to Lupe. He had like, you know, Erykah Badu, you know, Jill Scott and all these great people too, you know. So I just really like what he did, you know, to bridge it. Him, Terrace Martin, Kamasi Washington, of course.
Yeah.
And yeah. So it runs deep and it runs strong.
Yeah, definitely. I had a really interesting, I was watching there's a Quincy Jones documentary on Netflix I was watching the other day.
Okay.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. great. And his thing about hip hop being the jazz of its time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Really made a lot of sense to me. Do you feel like that?
I agree 100%. Q-Tip also mentions that too, you know? So that's how you see jazz rap like sort of happen with the Tribe Called Quest. And
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He said in the lyric, like he said, my dad said that hip hop reminded me of bebop or something like that, you know?
Right.
He rhymed those words, you know? yeah, it was super cool to really think of it that way, you know? And like, some people like Kendrick Lamar like really run with it, and they show you that, you know, building a great verse is like building a great solo, you know, like you have these central ideas and then you stray away, then you climax and then you mention that idea again, you know. So it's all about the vocabulary, you know, it's call and response. That's what jazz is, you know. And Rakim was another one that took the jazz rhythms and use that influence of like someone like John Coltrane in his rapping. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love those.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you like I know, but all of my real knowledge of that comes from that Hip Hop Evolution series,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great too, man, because it's like, you know, I feel like the documentaries help you to like connect the dots, you know what I mean? Because the Quincy one was a good one for me to like learn more and more about his life, because like, you know, you get to dive into more like the substance that happened behind them.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree. I love Hip Hop Evolution, you know? They made one about Louisiana music too, about Manny Fresh and like bounce music too, which is having a moment.
Yeah. You know, I don't, are you kind of plugged into, are you plugged in at all to the hip hop scene of Austin?
Yeah, I would say, I know a bunch of people that, you know, are working on some cool things, you know, Ross, of course, Rising is a Storm.
Of
you
course.
Know?
Yeah.
The Kings, Queens of, Austin rap scene. I feel like, you know, and like a bunch of other people, you know, like I just produce with, producer, my homie Stefano, say he's a DJ, and we produce under the name Almond Milk. So we almond do some milk? Stuff every now and then. You gotta drink your almond milk, man. But is it also this guy, Jay Wild? Jay Wild is a really good guy out here. He's from San Antonio, I believe, but like he's out here. So we produce a track that's coming out in a couple of weeks, actually.
Cool.
But yeah, so.
What's funny, when I was watching that Hip Hop Evolution, and I'm not even that plugged into the hip hop scene here, but when mm-hmm. I was watching that, I wondered if one of the things that's kept Austin, it seems like every scene had some kind of cohesive sound, mm-hmm. even though mm-hmm. the people were different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why those Houston exploded, Miami exploded. New Orleans mm-hmm. exploded, Atlanta exploded, Oakland exploded. All these places had their little explosions everywhere, but there hasn't mm-hmm. been in Austin. We've had amazing dudes, like mm-hmm. there's Z Lee mm-hmm. franchise, Kid Jones, like mm-hmm. all these guys, but they're not the same in any way.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So that is super interesting. I've seen that mentioned before, you know, Austin doesn't have its own sound. And it's crazy because it's harder and harder to do that now because like it's becoming genreless. Where it's not necessarily about where you're from, you know, like Roddy Ricch is from Compton, you know, and he doesn't sound like Kendrick Lamar or Sir or any of these people that like are more earthy and like conscious, you know. So it's just interesting, you know, but you kind of hear it and like, you know, I feel like, I don't know, it builds them up. Like the scene gives birth to it themselves, you know, because I feel like the genres of music we think about, and the sounds, it like started, like it probably started in a nightclub in Houston, you know, they were doing this, that,
right,
you know,
right.
freestyle. And like in New Orleans, like a club with a DJ just like, whoa, I'm doing this now. In Atlanta too, you know, because like, that's like a close-knit group of people that decided to do that sound, you know, like Gucci Mane and Future, you know, and all these people. And like, they just brought it out to the mainstream. But it is interesting because Austin doesn't have like an identity when it comes to hip hop, you know?
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. What would it be though? Would it be like some blues rock rap?
Well, I mean, I would hope not, but
that'd be fun.
One thing I thought it would definitely be like very stony.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah, very psychedelic. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, another scene I'm not really plugged into the jazz scene. Is there like are you in it? Are you mm-hmm. do you hang out at the Elephant Room before everything was closed?
So the first thing I did when I came, we came visit Austin was go to the Elephant Room, and you know, it was more of an academic vibe, you know, because that's something I also wrote about too recently. Because you know, it jazz is a music that's supposed to feel good, you know, it's supposed to just you're jamming basically. You play the head for like 16, 32 bars or everything you solo, so it's like it should be more fun and loose than it is sometimes. So. Sorry, but yeah, I went there once and like, you know, I didn't really hang out, but luckily like a lot of my homies are like doing it in different ways, like ATX Slowdown, Sloan, that guy is killing it, and like getting musicians together that play jazz and we play loops of music, and we would like have people rap over it. He actually recently played downtown during the protest in front of APD, and like he got support and stuff, like even from the APD, and like it was cool, you know, it brought people together, you know, they were playing music downtown. I didn't do that with them recently, but I used to play with them. But yeah, I like that that new jazz coming out.
Yeah,
those people. Sorry for rant, but yeah,
No,
I'm sorry.
This show is made for you to rant.
Okay, thank you. Just how I like it. But but no, so like they're doing it to keep it alive and like, you know, in a fresh way though. We still like hip hop, we still like pop music, you know, but we play jazz, you know. I feel like it's the idea behind that.
I feel like that's a little bit mm-hmm. fresher. I know exactly mm-hmm. what you mean. I've told friends of mine, because I'm not like a mm-hmm. super schooled musician, I'm not a jazz guy. Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. like, oh, you got to go down to the Elephant Room and see this guy. And I'm like, man, whenever I go to the Elephant Room, I feel like I'm going to catch on fire when I walk in there, because I'm just not good enough to even be in there. And also right. there is kind of this academic, it's not like, I don't mean this bad, and whoever's listening to this, please don't be mad at me, but it's not a great time.
No, it's just not. It's stuffy, man. It's stuffy.
Yeah, what you were describing sounds a lot more exciting and like something new. Yeah.
I always gravitated towards, you know, especially in the college years in Lafayette, you know, college age years, I like, you know, gravitated towards the people that were fresh and in the scene and just kind of like, oh, I could play jazz. Oh, let's have fun with it. Let's just jam, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why play Autumn Leaves, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there are some, I mean, I go see like Elias Haslinger, and that's just because he's been my friend since high school.
Oh, right. Well, I was about to say that the gallery scene is the scene that's like, they're killing it. I love them. Yeah, I went to see them before in church on Mondays.
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm going to get in trouble going there on Mondays.
No, yes. Exactly. Yeah. No, for sure. That's like that's what Austin jazz is. You know, I feel like they have that Austin vibe, that old Austin vibe that I always hear about, you know, but with jazz, you know, it's not just like, you know, Elephant Room. Oh, never mind. Whatever. Positive.
Nothing against it. Yeah, nothing against Elephant Room, man.
I mean, for sure, man.
God bless. It's been around for a long time.
I know. That's what I was about to say, actually. It's like a good attraction, you know? I feel like that is positive. It's a good attraction. Like, it's the first thing that came up when I came to the city. So that's beautiful.
I wonder if it's just all in everyone's head. Like, the guys that are doing this new kind of jazz don't think the guys at Elephant Room would like it. And then guys at Elephant Room are like, why isn't anyone coming in with any new jazz?
That's probably it. That's probably the truth.
Yeah. Once they're again,
having, like, they're having fun. You know, I did actually see a fun show there where, like, you know, like, they were all, like, they were academics. They were teachers and stuff. And, like, just cutting loose. So that's very admirable. I respect that.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that divide that we were talking about just is people just aren't even asking each other.
Mm, I agree with that. Yeah, that is interesting because, like, you know, someone like me, you know, just flip-flopping scenes, you know, like anyone could do it. You know, it's just some people, you know, I would talk about playing certain bars or Rainy or something, and, like, people that do it in hip-hop, they might not even think of it, but it's like, you know, maybe you meet halfway and, like, you find a band of musicians that already play there and, like, you just have fun with them and you just do vocals on that and blah, blah, blah. The worlds are closer than we think, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're limiting ourselves. That's it.
Yeah. I want to be able to walk through more worlds and experience more music than I do.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just going to take some work. What about R&B guys? Oh, I need to still introduce you and Drent. He's a big fan of yours. Are there people here in town that you think are really killing it? It's like the Alicia Lonnie's.
And oh yeah, for sure. Maylots. Yeah, he's killing it. Emerald Soul.
Yeah.
Sam Houston, if you want to make him into R&B, but you know, that's more of that soul rock, you know, like hardcore. I love him, man. That's the dude. But, so them for sure, kind of out of touch, you know, with that vibe, I would say, you know, because to me it just jumps to like older soul vocalists, you know, that are killing it. But yeah,
is there anywhere that has like a neo soul, like are there cities that have a scene of that play in bars? Because it's hard for me to imagine just because of the level of production and class. It just seems like it would be hard for like a D'Angelo to do a show in the gallery.
Mm-hmm. Right, for sure. I would say Dallas for sure has its scene, but they have a sound that's more funky and more rocky, I think. You know, you think of like people like Snarky Puppy or Funky Knuckles.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, but I feel like the other side of that, like they have that, you know, that cool jazz thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I feel like, you have to go to like bigger cities. I feel like, you know, to really have people playing the more modern R&B or like rap tinged neo soul, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like it's more rare, you know.
I'm sorry this is all over the place, but are you a Greg Phillinganes fan?
A what?
Greg Phillinganes, you know him?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Greg Phillinganes?
No, I don't know that. Oh, okay. No. Who is that?
He's a guy that played on like he started playing with Stevie Wonder when he was like, he was the other keyboard player when he was like 19.
Nice.
And then he went on to play with a lot of people. He was on Off the Wall, Thriller and Bad. He was a keyboard player on those records. And,
oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah.
That's sick.
Yeah. I listened to this podcast, Questlove's podcast, and he did like a 3-hour podcast on there.
That's awesome. I need to check out that podcast. Yeah,
he's great. Herbie's still playing, isn't he? Still making music, still doing stuff.
He had a tour. I think the last big tour he had was with Kamasi Washington. You know, like a a co-headlining tour they did. That was like only 10 dates. It wasn't more than 10 dates. But he's been doing it, you know. Hopefully he could come out still doing it.
Yeah. Are you doing any live streams or anything of your own?
Mm-hmm. So I was going to record a session, but actually I started to just continue to write, you know, the music that I was talking about earlier, the full band stuff. So I just continued to write, you know, and just like record demos of like all those songs. Mm-hmm. I got offered a show. I'll talk about it if it happens eventually. But, you know, I might do a first show. You know, I've seen that Far Out Lounge has been having some happening stuff happening. I saw my buddy Rob Malonso has been playing there, and Kalu played there, and like other people played there. So I might venture out into that eventually. I still give it a couple more weeks though.
Yeah.
But no live, I know, right? But no live streams yet, you know, so yeah.
I
just working.
Yeah. Have you been watching any?
Yeah. So Black Women's, we did one recently Sunday. So we recorded that on Sunday, I guess. Now we recorded like 2 weeks ago at the library. It was super fun, and we recorded some more other stuff, you know, that'll be dropping soon, you know. So but nothing personal.
Yeah.
At the time.
It's kind of weird to do. I mean, I did a few and I need to start doing some more just for the money, actually.
Right.
But it's weird singing to your phone.
It is. I know, dude. It's so weird. Like, this is easier, you know what I mean? Because like you will FaceTime and like, you know, you do video conferences with people all the time, you know, that just happens. But yeah, it's just crazy, man, because it's insane.
It is insane.
It's like not the same feeling, you know what I mean? And then also it's just like, I don't know. It's weird, like doing anything on live and like kind of waiting for people to pour in, because it's just awkward, man.
Very, very. Yeah, I see people that do the acknowledging, the talking all the way through and talk to the people that are, but I can't, I mean, I feel like I'll just, I set it far enough away from me and take off my glasses so I can't even see it.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure, man. Because I would go live sometimes and like just be making tracks at home, you know. And
I've then, like, seen some of those. People, yeah.
Yeah, some people will dial in, and it's hard to be like, "Oh, hey, what's up, dude?" You know.
Yeah.
And then also another thing too, I have to remind people that I'm just making tracks. I'm just having fun, you know. I'm not really like, this isn't a bona fide live stream, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, man. Before you go, any last sort of like hopes or ideas on how we can end this insane systemic racism we've been living under for so long?
Yeah, man, I feel like we kind of naturally touched on it, you know, just in a conversation where it's like we just have to like be more accepting of each other and just realize that we're all on the same team, you know. It's all of us. We're playing for the same team. So, you know, we should just have more empathy and like just understand that, you know, we're all in it together. And like, once we realize that, then, you know, we'll really see us come together in a special way. And it won't just be an idea anymore. But, you know, hats off to everyone continuing to spread the message, you know, because that's the main thing, to just, you know, keep at it, you know, keep the awareness going. And like, I'm sure we'll affect real change. I'm really excited right now. It doesn't feel like 2012, you know. It feels like a great new adventure, you know, where we're gonna like really get to the bottom of it and face our fears, you know, and just come out stronger.
Yeah, I hope so. Anything hope else? So too. Anything else you wanna say before we part?
Yeah, you know, all that good stuff. You know, music coming out soon. Spotify, you know, follow me on there.
Yeah, people Instagram. Can find you at JerronMarshall.com. You have links to everything there, right?
Yep. You know, looking forward to talking to you guys soon and listen to my music with you.
Yeah, I want to come see you play. Again, it's great talking to you too, man.
Yeah, I'll let you know whenever it happens. Yeah, and one will happen really soon.
Yeah, let's stay in touch, man. It's great talking to you again.
Will do. Later. Have a good one.
You too. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.